consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
Which old one raised superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war. That until there are no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes.
And welcome to Heal DC. This is Joni. We are thankful. We have some good news to share, and that is that our own Medea Benjamin, warrior for peace, is joining us right now in front of the White House. And we're so happy she can join us. A little later in the show, we're going to have a young poet, Janari. And then at 11 o'clock, we have a new show with Mark Thompson, Make It Plain. But right now, welcome, Medea. You there
Hello.
With us?
Yes, I am.
So thankful you're. Tell us where you are right now. What are you up to? What are you doing?
I'm in front of the White House. I'm here with Reverend Hagler, and we're supposed to do a press conference this morning about Netanyahu's visit.
Okay. And if Reverend Hagler wants to say a few words, that'd be great too.
Wonderful.
So. As we know, you know, that what is happening is beyond horrific. So share what you or Reverend Hagler might want to say about this is Netanyahu's, what, third trip to the so-called president?
Yes, it is his third trip. And we are just disgusted that he is coming here again. And yes, we want a ceasefire, and they're supposed to be talking about a ceasefire, but you know, you can't trust Israel with anything. They talk about a ceasefire, they even agree to a ceasefire, and then the next day they're already violating it. And we don't think that Netanyahu should be visiting the White House. He is wanted for war crimes. He should be at The Hague. He should be arrested. And yet he's not only meeting with Trump, he's meeting with Defense Secretary Hegseth. He's going to be meeting at the Congress as well. And, you know, he is should not be treated as a statesman, but as a pariah.
Absolutely. And the so-called president shouldn't be the president either. Of course, he's very complicit in the ongoing genocide that's taking place. So, and I believe you have, there's a demonstration today or
We've been demonstrating last night. We demonstrated as he was coming in. People were out here at 7 in the morning when he was going to go to his first meeting. We are going to be out here at noon, but the big demonstration will be at 7 o'clock tonight.
7 o'clock in front of the White House.
6 o'clock tonight in front
o'clock.
Well, as close as you can get, which is 17th in Pennsylvania.
Yes. And if Reverend Hagler wants to jump in, and that would be great. We're glad that he is out here and you are representing us. We're thankful for it. And Medea, do you think, I hate to ask this question, but it seems just horrific that there doesn't seem anything we can do to stop this genocide that just keeps going on and on, and it gets more and more horrific, it seems like, as time passes. But we have to continue to fight.
Well, that's right. And you hear Trump talking about how there's going to be a ceasefire very soon. And the people of Gaza are desperate for a ceasefire. But let's not be fooled. You know, I was in Gaza many times before October 7th and felt the desperation of the people. There was a 45% unemployment rate, not because the people of Gaza are not entrepreneurial, but because they couldn't get their goods inside or outside the country. The students that we met that had scholarships overseas couldn't get out to take advantage of that. Fishermen who were going out to get some fish to feed their families would be shot. So this economic blockade will still continue even if there's a ceasefire. So we have to push for an end to the bombing, but we also have to recognize that the root causes will not be solved until there's a lifting of this siege on Gaza. And of course, let's recognize the kind of horrific terrorism that's going on in the West Bank by these violent settlers, and then recognize that the entire, quote, 12-day war with Iran was an unprovoked attack on a country that doesn't have nuclear weapons by two countries that do have nuclear weapons. And then there is Israel's continuing violation of the ceasefire in southern Lebanon. Israel is a menace not just to the Palestinian people, but to the entire region. And the Trump administration is trying to gloss over all of this and push for, quote, better relations, Abraham Accords, they're called, with more of the Arab states, especially with Saudi Arabia, which will just continue to exacerbate the problem rather than deal with the real issue of the need for justice for the Palestinian people.
Absolutely. And why are they called Abraham Accords?
Yes, they're called Abraham Accords, right, as if this is some biblical kind of thing to sweep under the rug all of the problems that Israel has been causing in the region and just say, well, let's get better trade relations and diplomatic relations with the Arab neighbors. And meanwhile, we have to recognize that these Arab neighbors are horrifically complicit in what Israel is doing and haven't done anything to solve the problem. And yet the people in those countries are totally pro-Palestinian and afraid that if they go out on the streets, they will be beaten and arrested. So the Arab street is pro-Palestinian. The Arab leaders are just out for themselves and wanting to stay in power. And some of them have already capitulated to these, quote, Abraham Accords, and others might. And the big trophy would be Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia has said in the past that it won't sign these Abraham Accords with Israel until there is a solution to the Palestinian problem. And obviously, a 90-day ceasefire is no solution.
It certainly isn't. And I must say, Medea, without sounding childish, it's hard to believe that these people are human beings. They seem to me to be like monsters. you know, how could somebody, how could Trump or any of these people be so cruel? The cruelty in which people are being slaughtered and killed, it's just hard to imagine. Of course, growing up when I was a little bit after World War II with Hitler, you know, unfortunately, I can't imagine it. But still, it's still really hard to believe they're human beings.
It is hard to believe, and it's hard to believe that so many people in Israel support what their government is doing. Now, you can blame some of it on the propaganda and growing up to see the Palestinians as a threat and that kind of hateful attitude towards the Palestinians. But at some point, you've got to say, you know, don't you look at social media? Don't you have any kind of heart, any kind of humanity left? And I know, Joni, you as a Jewish American and myself as well, feel ashamed that our religion is being used for this genocide, just as we're ashamed to be American citizens at a time where our government is supporting this, despite all the opinion polls that keep showing more and more Americans not siding with Israel anymore. There's been an absolute sea change in public opinion, and yet we see in the White House and in Congress, the vast majority of people who are supposed to represent us are representing a foreign government. And part of that is the power of the lobby, the AIPAC lobby, the power of the evangelical right, Zionists. And part of it is just this adherence that they've had towards Israel for their entire political careers. Whatever it is, it just shows the vacuous nature of our, quote, democracy, that the people who are supposed to represent us represent Israel instead.
Absolutely. And doesn't it also show, Medea, the power of capitalism, that the so-called president of this country would put profits? Obviously, they feel they could make a lot of money by this genocide and slaughter and have control over that region. Is that correct?
Well, right. Yes, you're right. There's the people, a small group who make money from the weapons industry and the contracts that come from the trillion-dollar Pentagon budget that we have right now. There's the people who make money in the high-tech industry by supporting Israel's massive surveillance that is not just of its neighbors, now is worldwide, and the people who profit from access to the resources. So, yes, certainly there is an element of those who profit continuing to want to continue those profits at the expense of tens and tens of thousands of people dead.
Absolutely. And certainly we saw that in that horrible bill that was passed on, I guess it was July 4th, they passed that bill, which you probably know, Medea, off the top of your head, how many billions were added to the war industry.
Well, yes, and it wasn't a bill that focused on the Pentagon budget, that's separate, but it added another $150 billion to the Pentagon, as if $150 billion is nothing. Let's just throw an extra $150 billion at this horrible war machine that keeps us in a constant state of war.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just horrific. And hopefully, though, someday we will have a peace. Someday we will have a different society here in this country. Hopefully this country will, maybe in even our lifetimes, will witness a total turnaround from this horrific non-ending war that we're experiencing.
Now, Joni, it turns out that our press conference is about to start here.
Words about David Schwartzman, but I guess do you have time for a few sentences on that, or you need to go?
Let me just say that we lost a giant, and that whether it was around environmental issues or support for third parties or support for the justice in Palestine, we lost a real champion for peace and justice and environmental justice.
Yes. Thank you so much, Medea. Thank you for representing us, and we'll be looking out for listening to you.
Okay,
and
thanks so much.
I'm just going to say a few more words about who Medea just mentioned, David Schwartzman. We lost two real activists in the and precious human beings in the past month. that many, some people at WPFW know, and that is David Schwartzman, who was very active in the statehood, fight for statehood in D.C., a native New Yorker, lifetime activist, a good friend to many of us. We also lost, I'm going to say lost, but really these people will remain with us. They're so powerful and committed for so many decades, and that is Arturo Griffiths. Arturo Griffiths, some call him the mayor of Mount Pleasant. He left us, I think it was June 18th, originally from Panama. He was a tireless advocate for immigrants, but for all working people and for immigrant communities, very much involved with many of us at WPFW, the co-founder of the Latin American Youth Center, worked a lot on with workers. And we will be hopefully providing more salutes to these great, two great heroes that are now ancestors, and that is David Schwartzman and Arturo Griffiths. For the rest of the show, we're going to be speaking with a young poet named Jannari, and perhaps we have a little interlude from Magic Mike before we Jannari joins us.
Smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue Bahama waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot. My son got knocked.
And that's a little interlude from our great Magic Mike, our wonderful engineer, and much, much more. With that said, that's a great way to introduce this beautiful young poet, Jannari. Some of you may have heard her in person or on these radio waves. A 25-year-old poet, native Washingtonian, who has spent the last 7 months in Los Angeles. She's going to be sharing some reflections on her journey in D.C. and journey to L.A. She's been in Los Angeles for the past 7 months, but born and raised in D.C., just spent a few weeks with us here, but welcome, Jannari.
Hi, Joni. Thanks for having me.
So glad you could be with us all the way from the West Coast. So we're going to start out with you're going to be reading a few poems with us today, and you're going to start out with a poem about D.C. Do you want to say anything about it, or you want to just jump right into it?
Yes. Since we're discussing my journey from D.C. to California, I thought it would be a good idea to start with a poem about what it was like growing up in D.C. so I can show you guys where I'm at now at the end. But this poem is called "We Just Trying to Grow Up." When we were younger, they told us not to grow up too fast. But in the hood, we never had that chance. See, a lot of us ain't living to see 18, let alone 21. So we don't have a choice but to grow up fast, like how life came at us. Running through the hood, searching for answers, looking up to God, begging that he answers us. Like why my friends keep dying, why these mothers keep crying. God, I'm trying really hard to hang on, but I can't find enough reasons to live anymore. You're taking all of mine, and if you need them more, just let me know. Please give me a reason so that I can let go. Because I'm starting to lose hope and accept my fate that in a few months, my mother might be putting me in my grave. Don't grow up too fast. I wish I didn't have to, but you don't get to be a child when you don't have enough friends to play with you on the playground because you had to watch so many of them go on the ground. Now you stand on your end of the seesaw, knowing that your friends then will forever be in the air. While you stuck on the ground, you try to push yourself up, but it's way too much pain holding you down. You don't get to be a child when there are more drugs in the hood than candy, and you lighten up every day trying to control your anxiety. Anxiety? What's that? Don't you dare say that. You want to get smacked? You want these people to think you crazy. You want these people to think I don't take care of my baby. You don't get to be a child when you have seen more your few years than most will see in their entire lifetime. But you better not let anyone see you crying. Ain't nothing wrong with you. I've been through way more than you. So I don't want to hear not another word from you. Okay, I'm sorry for being so weak. I just wanted to talk about all the things that have been haunting me in my sleep. You don't get to be a child where I'm from. You don't get to be a child when the city doesn't care enough to keep pedophiles away from black kids. So within just a half mile radius, there are 49 sex offenders on the list. And every day you have to walk past grown men that want to experience your body before you even know you have one. You walked a long way now. So many men complimented you in your Barbie girl dress that you can't even put it on now. You don't get to be a child when you carrying around a pocket knife, mentally preparing yourself to take a life in order to save your own, because every day you living in fear that you won't make it home. You don't get to be a child when you can't wear your favorite color outside because a gang claimed it. And if they see you, you dead. Because the color of your clothes can get a bullet put in your head. The color of your skin can get a bullet put in your head. Those nice shoes you got on can get a bullet put in your head. The block you were raised on can get a bullet put in your head. The gender you fell in love with can get a bullet put in your head. DC ain't the same anymore. DC, Death City, DC, don't come, because my city don't shine anymore. Too many suns are gone. My city ain't fun anymore. Too many guns are drawn. We ain't on the beach collecting shells. We on the block collecting shell casings. We ain't going to art school and painting. We out there cleaning our friends' blood off the pavement. Half of my friends went off to college and the other half went in caskets. It's crazy because we were all just in high school, going high to school. Because even though my friend died yesterday, I couldn't afford to be late. I had a test that day. So I showed up, even though my mind was torn up. And the hood, we ain't trying to grow up too fast. We just trying to grow up.
And that is the poet Janari. Janari, how old were you when you wrote that poem?
I was 19 years old.
So that was 6 years ago.
Yes.
And I think you also feel some joy as being a poet.
Yes, I do.
So can you, again, even though that poem is very intense, tell us about the joy that you experience as a not just a poet, but a poet who is very well loved, I know, in DC, and I'm sure in LA as well.
Yeah. So poetry, just like any other art form, is an outlet. So even though you hear a lot of pain in a lot of my poetry, at the end of all of that, I'm able to release all of that. So I'm not holding on to that anymore. I'm sharing it with the world and sharing my story to help others, like, put words to their own. But I'm not holding on to that pain anymore. I've released it. Every time you hear me speak my pain, you're hearing me release it. So that brings a lot of joy and a lot of peace. But also just traveling around the world and performing and telling my story and having so many other people, like, validate how good I am and just validate my truth. Like, because growing up, it was like all the stuff that I put into rhythm now is stuff that I was being ignored for in the past. Like, just brush it off, just bottle it up. But now everybody is listening to the stuff that they wanted me to shut up about, and they love it. So I love it.
I hear you. And Janari, we're going to get to L.A. in a moment, but you actually traveled around doing your poetry. I think you went to Paris and other places. Tell us a little bit about that. What was that like?
So I've lived in about 10 different places in the last 8 years. I graduated from high school in 2017, so 8 years ago. And since then, I've been traveling around. And at first, it was just in search of safety. Like I wasn't even trying to go around and like share my poetry as much as I did. Like that wasn't my intention. That was just something that I happened to do as I was running around looking for safety. And look, like at the end of the day, that's what ended up getting me here. But I've lived in Philadelphia, New York, Texas, traveled to Atlanta, Paris, Jamaica, and many, many other places. And in all of those places that I've been, I've performed and I've left a part of my story and a part of myself there. So it's just been a really lovely experience. Like I'm able to go back to those places. I have community in those places. I'm recognized, I'm loved, and it's just beautiful because it's like I'm not just my life is always much bigger than the one space that I'm in because there's people rooting for me from so many different parts of the world now. Even with
Wow.
social media, like my poetry has been to places that I haven't even been before, and they're rooting for me just as much as the people that met me in person.
Wow, that's fabulous. And it's
Yeah.
so you went to at least two different two countries outside of this one,
Yes.
Paris and Jamaica. Did you want to share anything about either the experience at either of those places?
Paris was really beautiful, and that trip came at a time when I really needed the world to be bigger than what was going on in America. So it actually like saved my life and saved my creativity during the time. But while I was there, I was able to like see I saw like differences, of course, like their croissants taste way better, like the architecture is a little different, the social climate and everything else. But when I go to these places, I also see our similarities. Like no matter how different we sound, talk, eat, like we're all very, very similar as humans. And I'm able to just go from Southeast DC to Paris and have people feel validated and just healed by like the stories that I'm sharing from a place they haven't even been before, because our stories and reality are very similar. Like for
That's
people in Paris to be feeling my story as much as people in Southeast, it just showed me a lot and like just brought me more closer to the world around me.
wow. That's
Like
very
we're
encouraging.
all way more similar than we are different.
Exactly. You're listening to Poet Janari for the rest of the hour, and this is me, Joni, 89.3 FM to Heal DC WPFW. And of course, we've just had a very pretty intense week, to say the least, with the 4th of July. I must say one positive thing. I heard and saw more renditions of Frederick Douglass's the What to the Slave is the 4th of July than I've ever seen or heard before. And we here at PFW on his bicentennial, Frederick Douglass, we had a whole half a day honoring him, but this was very inspiring to see so many people giving their own rendition of the Fourth of They Lie
Yeah.
speech. But Janoy, let's get back to your travels. You left DC, I think it was in December, in November,
November, yes.
and then you went to California. And later on in January, there were those horrific fires. But before we get to the fires, tell us what was it like for you? What were some of the positive things about being there in LA, where you're back there now? But what was it when you first got there?
When I first got here, a lot of the things that like welcome, well, one, I was able to, like, I was able to reconnect with my first youth program from DC. It was called FLY, Facilitating Leadership in Youth. And I was able to reconnect with one of my old mentors right before I moved here, like the day before. And we had been disconnected for a decade. So when I first landed here, she was the one who picked me up, dropped me off at my house with food, other things that I would need. And just so I was just welcomed with love when I thought I was coming to a place where I didn't know anyone. Like the universe just brought us together right before I came out here. And I was able to, like, yeah. So that was the first thing. But also all the nature out here, like the mountains and the trees and the fruits and vegetables and herbs growing around me. Like, that's not something that I have in DC, but that's something that I really love. And just to have more of that around me now, it just makes it feel more like life out here. Like when I'm in DC, because I was born and raised in Southeast, it always feels like survival there. No matter how quote unquote pretty they try to make the city, I know what's really going on. So it always feels like survival. But when I got out here, after being able to calm down, it just started to feel like life out here.
Wow. And in a minute, we'll get to your sharing what happened with those horrific fires. But tell us the community you lived in, which experienced the fires. But anything else you want to say before you start talking about those fires last January about LA and where you were living? And
So I actually moved to LA a year before. I was out here December 2023, and I came for a couple of months, but I had moved to West Hollywood, like right in the heart of LA. So I really, really did not like LA with that being my first experience. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like already like, I don't really know based off my first experience. So I was still like trying to get used to it. I knew I was more comfortable here, but I didn't see the value of where I really was until after the wildfire. Like I was only here for 2 months before it started. So I was really just getting settled in, but because my first experience was in West Hollywood, I didn't understand how beautiful of a place I found the second time, like the Altadena area. I didn't realize where I was until the fire took most of it.
Wow. And tell us about Altadena, for people don't know. What was it about it that's very special?
Altadena, so once the fire happened, I learned that Altadena is a historically Black and Brown community where a lot of the families out here, they've owned their homes and businesses for generations, or they were able to like build off of generational wealth. So there's like an actual community here, because when we're given resources, we're able to build community. When resources are taken from us, we don't have it. So out here, they were able to build an actual community no matter what's going on in the world. They had a foundation here. So once the fires happened and burned up most of the place. The fires were burning for about 3 weeks. And in Altadena, a lot of the residents reported the fire trucks driving right past them. So a lot of the residents in Altadena were left to fight the fires on their own, like with water hoses, filling up trash cans with waters. It was just crazy, but they did it because this was their community. And even when the fire ran and burned a lot of them out, they still showed up for each other. Like they came right back, even with their houses gone, to make sure that the people who still had their houses had what they needed, or the people who didn't have a house anymore had somewhere to go, or just that everyone had something to eat or someone to like be there with them. Like no one just ran away from tragedy. They all ran to it to show up for each other.
Wow. And remind us who the famous author, and I'm forgetting her name right now, who's from Altadena.
Octavia Butler.
Yes. So that's quite something. Perhaps sometime you could read to us about Octavia Butler, read a little bit of her brilliant work.
Yes, and I can say that Octavia Butler predicted this fire in her writing. She predicted that the fire will happen in 2024, and it happened the next month after, January 2025. She wrote a fiction story about a young girl in the Altadena area who fled to the north to escape like corruption, fires, and like climate change down here. And basically, the story tells how a wildfire burns up most of the community. And a month after the year that she predicted it would happen, it happened. And she's still buried in Altadena. And there were some fire damage in like the cemetery where she was, but her grave was not damaged.
Wow, that's something. Yeah. So, Janari, after you experienced that horrific fire, and it was very frightening, but yet you stayed in L.A., and in a moment we're going to jump back to D.C., and you just had a visit here, but what encouraged you that you wanted to continue to stay out there in Altadena or in that area, despite the horrific fire that you witnessed?
What encouraged me to stay was that the immediate community response, like people immediately started showing up for each other. So even though this is the scariest thing I've ever experienced, this is the first time I've experienced it with the community like this, so like something tragic with the community like this. So I just decided to stay because I've experienced tragedy, pain, gun violence, everything in almost every place that I've lived, the 10 different places in 8 years. But there wasn't community there. That's why I just kept running and kept going, because this is what I was searching for. And I finally found it. Even though the craziest thing happened right before, it was still community, and it is what I was searching for my whole life. So I decided to stay because from the jump, I've always been ready to face anything with my community. I just needed a community to face it with me, and I found it here. So I stayed.
Wow, that's something. And of course, as we know, an LA area is going through some horrific ice raids, but I don't know if you want to talk about the ice raids now or jump to DC and come back to the
jump to DC, because I actually left right before I started like up in their attacks in LA and like violently abducting people. But the last month I just spent in DC.
Okay, and so share with us with anything positive about it, but also some of the changes in the city. Based in part from the mayor and in part from our so-called president. What did you notice that was happening? But if you want to start with anything positive, but then some of your concerns of the changes in D.C. upon your return.
Okay, yeah, I can start with like why I came out to D.C. So my high school, KIPP DC College Preparatory, reached out to me and asked me to perform for their graduation this year. So I came to DC to perform for KIPP's graduation on June 6th, and it was a beautiful experience. Like, it just made everything full circle, because I shared a poem that I'll share later in the show about like my journey after high school looking for safety and how I finally found it. And they asked me to come and tell my story to the students the same year that my story came full circle for me. So it was just like perfect timing and everything. And I also realized I graduated in 2017 and I just performed for the class of 2025. I am 25. They're the class of 2025. A lot of them are 17 and I'm the class of 2017. So it just felt like really the right timing for me to go back and speak to the students. And that poem, like, they've been talking about it all over DC now.
Wow.
But outside of that, I've had other shows in DC throughout the month. Like, I featured with Love Iconic at the Capitol Hills Boys and the Capitol Hill Boys Club, their art gallery in Southeast. And that was an amazing show. And I also featured at the Poetry Gallery with Amuche the Poet.
Oh, wow. That's really something.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
That's quite something. And we look forward to hearing you more the next time you come to D.C. But you and I were talking. One thing that I found very interesting, and I agree with the concern you have, you know, there are changes in D.C., part of it because of the mayor, part of it because of the president. I'd say those were two key factors. And one of the changes we talked about was the buses. that may seem not that important, but share with us your concern. There was just as of June 29th, all the buses in D.C. area, not just D.C., but Maryland, parts of probably PG County, Montgomery County, and more. Every single bus was changed. So talk about what your concern about that is, especially, you know, for seniors.
Yeah. So first, that was crazy for me, and I know it's been crazy for everyone else around mm-hmm. the city as well. And when I featured at the Poetry Gallery show, the other feature, Brandon Douglas, he mentioned how the changes to the bus felt like erasure.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. yeah, like they're taking even more of the city from us. And to me, changing the buses like that, like all of the buses, changing the names where most of the buses go, the starting and end point, like that was the last thing they honestly need to do to take the city. Because now everybody from D.C. has to learn how to renavigate their own city. Like, they've already been changing how most of the city look, but we still knew the X2 gonna take you here, the 90 bus gonna take you here, the B2 gonna get you down there. But now, not only does everything look different, but the way to get to everything is different. Like, you literally have to relearn the entire city. And that's something I do as I travel, but these are places I've never been before. Now I have to do it in a place I was born and raised. And the first day that I had to get on the bus after the change, it was raining in D.C. And when I walked up to the bus, there was one of my elders standing in the rain. She had an umbrella, but she was just staring up at the bus with complete shock and fear in her eyes. And just, she was crying, like, hysterically, and not saying anything. Her mouth was wide open. And I knew exactly what she was thinking, because I was thinking the same thing. Like, what is the D20? Where is the X2? But I was able to easily pull out my smartphone and see, this is the bus that's going to take me down to H Street. But she didn't know that, because a lot of our elders, a lot of our youth, just a lot of our residents do not have smartphones or working phones, or phones that could just pull up exactly where they need to go. And the metro,
or even if we have them, we don't know how to use it.
Exactly. And there's not enough our elders and like a lot of our residents don't know how to use technology, because no one ever focused on teaching them. Mm-hmm. And so it just completely changed the game. Like, you stole the city from our elders, our disabled people, our youth who have to travel, because we didn't have school buses growing up. We had to get on the metro. Mm-hmm. And our moms or our big sisters and brothers taught us our route. You get here, you get on the A bus, one of these A buses, and then when you get off right here, you get on the B2. Now, none of those buses are the same. Most of those stops aren't the same, and they're not, like, it's just all different. So there's a lot of our residents who won't be able to adjust to the change, and Metro does not have, or the city does not have, the proper support out there to help. The Metro support that they had out there did not know what was going on either.
Absolutely. And I could definitely agree with you as a bus rider and a Metro rider. It's just extremely upsetting. And, you know, Trump had claimed that he wanted to take over WMATA, the Washington Metro, you know, buses and trains. And it's a very creepy feeling, because it kind of feels that's what's happening. I know I tried to get on a bus that used to be able to take me to Silver Spring in 5 minutes, but all the streets were blocked because of the so-called Purple Line. And so none of those buses are going to be working for quite some time. And it just seems It's a very frightening feeling that just our simple buses and trains are no longer what they've been for decades. And the mayor supposedly did some kind of survey, but I can't imagine that.
None of my people saw the survey, and I know a lot of people.
That's right, and I don't know anybody.
Who she asked herself and Trump.
Right, it seems like that's who she did ask, that Trump has played a role with this confusion with the buses. So let's jump. Anything else you want to say? Because we're going to be running. We have about 10 minutes left. Anything else about D.C. or you want to jump back into what's happening in L.A. with the ICE raids?
I would like to comment a little on the violence that's happening in D.C. Mm-hmm. I've seen, I honestly lost count about how many murders, shootings, and violent crimes that I saw just since July 4th, and it is now July 7th. Like, if you scroll through the Potomac Press DC page that lets us know about different crimes happening in the city, he had about 25 to 30 posts within the last 3 days to talk about different things that have happened. I've lost people personally in these losses, and it's just getting really bad. And when I first got there, I just saw more and more of our youth falling into that same cycle of violence. Like, it is so many of them.
Right. And of course, what's very important to state is that the mayor has cut the budget for violence interrupters. All those programs have been cut drastically. So, it's quite outrageous. On the positive note, apparently, Baltimore, the city of Baltimore, has had one of the lowest rates of violence and homicides on record. And that's thanks to apparently their mayor in Baltimore. But the same is not happening in Washington, D.C., as you're saying.
Yeah, and honestly, all of these cities, like D.C., Baltimore, Philly, like there's time periods where it might be a little calmer and people can report that, but the violence is really, really bad, and we're losing a lot of people, and our cities are not putting in the resources we need to, change the course of things, like get us back to community. Like, nothing is being done to get us back to community. So we really, really need to focus on uplifting the community programs that we already have, because there is people out there doing the work. We're just not supporting them. But it is time now more than ever to go and support these programs and stop fake begging your politicians to do it for you, because you know that they won't. Like, really get out there and focus on your community, because we are dying at crazy numbers all across America.
Yeah, and of course here in D.C. we spend millions of dollars on a new stadium, but cut the programs for many of the things that we need, and Trump's going to be cutting even more. So let's jump back real quick to L.A. and the ICE raids. Were you there, or what's your perception or any comment about what's happening with that horrific situation?
So I left LA to go to DC for my performances right before the attacks really started to pick up, because they happened I've never seen it at this level, but like their ICE and the police are always harassing our immigrant communities. But like after I left town, they just start violently abducting and harassing people. Like, they don't care. They don't see any laws. They're literally just out here kidnapping people with the permission of our government and our president.
Absolutely. And is the community trying, I guess, their best to organize and protect each other?
Just like after the fire, the California community has impressed me so much again, because they are really showing up for their community to, like, protect them from ICE. Like, I mean, like, standing in the way, putting their bodies on the line, putting their businesses and their lives on the line to protect their neighbors who have helped them build this community, as they should, but as we all should. But California is a good example of how to show up for each other.
Wow, that's very encouraging. That's across cultures. People are coming together to support each other.
Yeah, like of course every place has its issues. So of course you have the people who aren't community oriented in LA, of course Hollywood and stuff like that. But California has more of a balance where you're still able to see that community even when you see the rest of America. Like, and I found that. So I only put that part in because I don't want someone to come out here and think everybody is going to show up for them. No, but you're going to find more people. You're likely to find more people who will here.
Yes, I
Or
know.
ways to take that behavior back to your own community.
Yes, and of course, it's outrageous to say the least that this man is calling people immigrants, or some of whom this was their country. The United States stole
Literally. We are on
California.
their land and he's
Yes.
telling
Yes.
them they're illegal.
So we must never forget that this was their land, and these people stole it from the people who lived
Thank
here
you for bringing it up.
for thousands of years. That's something my daddy taught me when I was a baby. This land was stolen. Anyway, let's make sure that in the few minutes we have left, you share another poem with us, Janari.
Okay, so this poem is, I wrote this after the fire in LA. It's called Fire. I've been writing these poems as I walk through the valleys of death. Sometimes my poems are the only things that I have left. People treat me like I got an S on my chest when I'm just a girl trying to do my best. I keep trying to do what's right, but things keep going left. I ran from the gunfire in the east. Now I'm running from wildfires in the west. And everybody looking at me like Janari was next. I've lived in 10 places in the last 8 years. I've been making a home for myself right here. I've been working through all my fears. The fires burnt up most of my new community, but my house was in the clear. My next level is near. I'm staying here. I'm becoming known as one of the best amongst my peers. I got a story to tell and I want everyone to hear. If you hear what I've been through, you probably break down in tears. I took a look in the mirror and I love what I see. I'm exactly who I am supposed to be. I am me. I am called Janari. I've been here before and I'll be here again. This time I chose to fight the world with my pen, with my poetry. My presence will never end. My voice will outlast me. I'm still well known even after they tried to outcast me. I'm a victor, no longer a victim. I had to learn how to love the land around me, even if I hate the system. All that pain just left me full of wisdom. I'm from the A place where either you or your dreams die. Some call it the project, some call it a project where everyone that's born immediately becomes a suspect. A lot of us are dying there. I didn't die, but my dreams did. Janari, I know you're scared to dream again because you don't want your dreams to be American, but you have to dream. I'm a great historian, but I'm not a great dreamer. Yet somehow I made it from Southeast DC all the way to Pasadena. After all that searching, I finally found a community in Altadena, a sanctuary. I just got here and almost lost it all in January. It lost a lot, but it still stands. I lost a lot, but I still stand. I'm grieving for the land. I've been grieving all my life, and now I'm even grieving where I stand. Everything still worked out, even though none of this was in the plan. I'm a phoenix living on a phoenix. Altadena didn't just say their community. I actually seen it. Thank you.
Wow, Janari, thank you so much. I'm sending you a big hug across the country, and
Thank you. I'm
we're
sending you
very
one back, Joni.
and we're very proud of you, and we're very happy you could join us. And of course, this won't be the last time. Poet Janari, born and raised in Washington, D.C., now living all the way on the other side of the country, and in L.A. doing quite well. We're very, very proud of you. And
Thank you.
coming up next, as some people may know, I've been on for 2 hours for maybe about a month. But that was only getting ready for the new show that's about to start today at 11 a.m. None other than Mark Thompson with his show called Make It Plain. I'm sure some of many of you know Mark Thompson for many different reasons. He was on Wednesday mornings once a month on Verna's show, but he's also longtime activist, very close friend of Dick Gregory, and much, much more. Reverend out in the streets. I'm sure he's going to be talking about the 4th of July. I bet he'll be talking about that as well as what's going on in the world of ours. So stay tuned for Mark Thompson at the 11 o'clock hour with Make It Plain. I also want to give a very special thank you to our wonderful Magic Mike. We couldn't do this show without him. He is greatly loved, and he is a great treasure at this radio station. Thank you, Mike. And listeners, stay strong, and we're going to go out with Bob Marley.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. For nearly five decades, support from listeners like you has kept WPFW's wheels rolling. In fact, the single largest category of donations comes from those who donate an unused car to the station. That's right, running or not. Even a car sitting idle that needs thousands of dollars in repairs can do wonders for WPFW. If you can't drive it, donate it. WPFW will get the proceeds, and you'll get a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
How to get WPFW swag in your life? I don't just say I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Greetings. This is Papa Wabe inviting you to check out my new show, Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, every Thursday morning from 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We present a mashup of positive, uplifting music of different genres, mainly roots reggae. We also feature poetry, speeches, artist interviews, and so much more. That's Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, Thursday mornings, 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on WPFW 89.3 FM, making it a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Free your mind!
Hello, WPFW listeners. Summertime is here. Words, Beats, and Life has the event for your family and friends this season. The second annual DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 26th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. With live music by Go-Go Legends, EU, featuring Sugar Bear, vocalist Navasha Deya, jazz fusion trio The Mastetics, Black Folks Don't Swim, Kamau, and much more. Plus Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, Interactive Dance Stage, Live Art Installations, Hands-On Workshops, and Health and Wellness Pavilion. July 26th on the National Mall. Full details at wblinc.org/DMVMade. See you there. Brought to you by Words, Beats, and Life with support from WPFW.
The
talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
The Birchmere presents Omar, July 17th, Hubert Laws, July 20th, Hiroshima, July 24th, and Sheila E., July 30th. Details at thebirchmere.com.
Equal Portions is delighted to join Jazz and Justice Radio, WPFW, every Monday at 1 p.m. We're talking everything food justice, interviewing folks across all sectors, and playing the hottest new DMV music with your host, Stacia Lamira.
Hey, y'all. On Equal Portions, we'll be discussing all aspects of the way we interact with food, from the problems affecting our communities to the history and the story of the food around us.